Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said Hellmann's. They don't make it from Hellmann's.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pots, pints.
My wife's cakes are selling up hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Delicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, local food and drink news in and around Cambridge. I am Matt Bentman and I'm joined in the studio by Sue Bailey.
Hello.
Our colleague Alan Alder will be back for the next programme, but what is on today's serving platter, Sue?
Well, the council has plans to redevelop Cambridge Market and we're going to have a look at what it means for good or ill. We'll be hearing from Alex Creppy of Amelie Restaurant and his recent move to Ben's Yard to run their restaurant and cafe. And Ben Aveling popped into the studio this week to tell us about life a year on from the closure of the Radmore Farm Shop. We've also got plenty of local food and drink news, free food, social media news, and at the end of the programme, local food jobs. So, let's begin.
Shops, cafes, restaurants, bars, they come and go. And some stay for the long haul and become favourites. The Gardenia, Bacchanalia, Restaurant 22, Aromi, The Geldart, Cambridge Wine Merchants, Browns, just to name a few. And then there's Cambridge Market. Now that has been around for 800 years. But did you know that there are always plans afoot to revamp it? In the swinging 60s, Baroness Trumpington, Lib Dem MP for Cambridge, saw through the market as we know it today. In the 90s, however, they wanted to revamp it. Plans were put in place, but the revamp was stopped because of where the market was going to be located, a site far out of town. And understandably, the traders put their collective foot down and the plan was halted. But they resumed in 2018. However, that died a death due to the COVID lockdown. But today, those plans are back on the table and the City Council wants you, the public, to tell them how to make the market a better place for everyone. Does anything need to be done to the market? Maybe you think it's fine as it is. Well, they need to know that too.
Hello, my name's Oliver Deed. We are here today talking about the future of the Guildhall, the Corn Exchange and the Market Square.
Oliver works for the consortium charged with revamping Cambridge Market. And how they do this depends partly on what we, the public, tell them. Last Saturday, I attended his community workshop event. The group, with Oliver as the link between us and them, have been holding roadshows around the city and doing community workshops, which just means interested members of the public meet with him in a room and we talk. And they've been talking with the market traders for their opinions too. All sounds fine so far, right? So why is this a big deal? Why is it newsworthy? Here's Glenys Self, who works on the market and runs the Friends of Cambridge Market Facebook page.
As traders, our greatest concern is the logistics and where they're going to actually put the market when it comes to redeveloping the market square, because they're going to take the cobbles and flatten them so there'll be a smoother surface for people in wheelchairs, which is all very good, but they're going to have to shut down most of the market, I think all the market as it is, and put the market somewhere else. And where that will be could have good or bad consequences for the future of the market. In places where they haven't got this part of the procedure right, places like Ipswich, no market. Stevenage, no market. There's Northampton, Nottingham. They regenerated their market squares there and there's no market anymore. And it's the same story up and down the country. And markets are disappearing at an alarming rate.
But Oliver had this to say.
Well, the strong brief that's come from the council is that this is a seven-day market and should remain a seven-day market. So we had a discussion in this particular session of a couple of quite radical ideas about whether this should just be a public square and the market should be moved elsewhere. That's not something that's under consideration. The council very clearly outlined in the brief and to retain this as a seven-day market moving forwards. And I suspect the people of Cambridge, if there was any proposition to remove this as a seven-day market, would be up in arms, and rightly so. It's been there for 800 years. You know, why can't it be there for another 800 years?
The wobbly bit is this.
It is going to remain a seven-day market. They're not actually going anywhere. They might have to rearrange slightly during the actual construction process or be decanted in certain other close proximity areas.
There's a few things there that lack definition. Decant the market traders and their stalls into close proximity areas. What is close proximity? Is it 500 yards? A mile? The outskirts of town? We're just going to redevelop the market square. You stallholders, you just need to survive in the time it takes us to fix the square up. Then you can come back. You know, I wonder if market traders have pretty thin margins. Many of them are there because they love the market life. Maybe their families have always worked on the market stalls. Maybe it's their only chance to get a foothold in the centre of a town with ridiculously high rents and rates. And what happens if the redevelopment hits a snag and they say, oh, by the way, we've encountered some problems, it's going to take another month of work? Stallholders need to know if that is a possibility, because that could put them out of business. We, the public, need to know if that's a possibility, because it could affect what we want from this redevelopment. And this has not been decided upon. But the risk is, if they decant the market traders too far away from the market, or maybe they split them up into two or more sites, it could mean the end for some of these stalls. And what defines a market anyway? Let's say, just for example, they only wanted the food stalls to come back. Does that still constitute a market? Is there anything written that says Cambridge Market must comprise, you know, maximum 20% food stalls, 20% clothing stalls, 10% bike repair, that sort of thing? I don't know that there is. Because the art and craft market at All Saints Garden, that has a rule. Stallholders must make their own products and everything must be handmade. I'm really not sure that there is a rule, code or description that says what the composition of Cambridge Market should be. But I have put this question to Cambridge City Council and they're due to send me a reply. The person who has the information on that is away this week. So they're going to reply soon and then I will report back to you. Anyway, going back to the community workshop, among the people that attended the meeting that day was Tony. Tony was a student here in the 1960s, and he's lived around Elizabeth Way Bridge area since about the last 10 or so years. And he said,
so I think the market should offer what you don't get from either Amazon shopping or supermarket shopping, really. And I think, you know, Cambridge needs to try and protect itself from the loss of independent shops, independent market stores.
One idea for the market is to cut the square in two and have the half that is in front of the Guild Hall reserved for events when needed.
If there is a desire to have outside screens to watch, you know, Euro football or something, then I'm sure you can find a way. And remember, the Arts Theatre is a theatre that needs support. People need to use it more. And you know, we've got a new cinemas complex going on in the shopping centre just over there. And so you think, you know, it should be behind the Guildhall is entertainment zone. In front of the Guildhall is market and civic, centre of Cambridge. And that, you know, in terms of design, I think that would be a handy thing to think about. Yeah.
The consortium wanted us, the public, to know that the ideas currently floated are still ideas. Nothing is set in stone yet, other than the mantra of the seven-day market must remain. Yeah, sure, but in what shape and how many stalls? For example, there's currently 92 stalls on the market. We were presented with sketches of a redeveloped market where it appeared as if only a single aisle of stalls remained in this future vision. Everything else was set aside for seating, more space, even street food vans. But apparently these sketches were simply sketches and not to be taken literally. But it did cause confusion, and I think it rallied some people's thoughts.
Given the constraint that you said that you wanted to keep it as a seven-day market, I think you should keep the whole space as a market. If it's going to be one way or t'other, don't compromise, don't have this messy thing in the middle. Just go for it, but make it more attractive.
And how do you make it more attractive?
And that does mean a bit more seating, I think it does. And probably, you know, more space. Mm. It just seems to me it's terribly crowded. And then, of course, at this side, you've got where the toilets are. It's just not very attractive.
No.
What is that, that black thing?
That's the downstairs.
Yeah, and that's the toilets are in there.
Yeah.
Bins, that's a compactor.
Yeah.
The refuse is something that needs sorting, both in the market and in the public realm around the Guildhall. And it's something that we're looking at the moment, how we can improve that. So it's just, it's obviously got to be highly functioning. And particularly in the summer when they're, you know, emptying, and there's so much refuse every day. But it's not functioning adequately at the moment. So it is something we're looking at.
There were no solutions to this yet. Neither was there an answer to demountable stalls. The council and the consortium are proposing replacing the current market stalls with modular demountable ones. The idea being to set them up in the morning and put them away in the evening, so the market square can be used for evening events. Now, maybe these stalls are put away in a compound, but no one knows where this compound should be yet. But the traders would be responsible for putting the stalls up and taking them down in what I've heard is an already tight time frame in the mornings and evenings, where they already have to set up stalls, or set up their wares, take them down, load them up, and leave. Wheeling a demountable stall back and forth adds significant time to that small time frame that they've got. Again, it's one option and nothing has been finalised. Some stall holders require a lot more space, like Emerald Foods and Simon from the Sunday Market. Would these new 3x3 metre stalls be practical for these traders? When asked about using the market square as a civic space for events, the answer was that, well, they could use up a quarter, a third, or a half of the market space. But that might only be for a few times a year. Well, could those few times be the most lucrative times for the market, like Christmas? Would the civic events rip into the stallholders' peak times? And the plans seem to ignore the consultation the City Council carried out previously, which found that the support and commitment generally was for the outdoor market as the primary user of the site, and that other events should either be held elsewhere or only held outside current market hours. The market redevelopment has an online survey at engage.cambridge.gov.uk. As of today, 457 people have responded, and if you want to make your voice heard about how the market square should change, you have until Sunday the 28th of July to get those opinions in. It all counts.
Absolutely, and there will be other points in the process if it moves on where people can actually get their feedback in, but I think now is a really good time to get your feedback in because we are at a very early stage in the process and things can change with the design as we move through the so-called REBA stages. So we're going up to REBA stage 2, which is concept design. As we go through that process, you know, more and more avenues to shape the proposals close down as decisions get made. So now is a really good time to get your feedback in because lots can change. So I would encourage everybody that listens to this to go onto our website, engage.cambridge.gov.uk, and get their comments in.
And that survey is pretty vital. And if you want some good ideas as to what may help the development of Cambridge Market, then do go and have a look at the Friends of Cambridge Market Facebook page. To start with, there is a direct link to that survey at the top of their page, and they've done their own illustration of what they believe a future market could look like, featuring a horseshoe design with permanent double stalls for the larger traders, a central walkway, even a restored fountain, amongst other ideas. But these images, these mock-ups of the market in the council's redevelopment plans, I think have caused a bit of consternation. They all show the market is containing less than half the space that it currently has, and with far fewer stalls. Do you think it's interesting why they've chosen to portray it like that? Perhaps it's all the more reason to do this survey if you can. If you want to keep the market vibrant and diverse, this is your chance to have your say. July 28th is the closing date.
Oh, so coming up soon then.
Very soon, yeah.
I'm going to make sure I do because it sounds horrible, the idea of all these towns, which were market towns, not having a central market. That's crazy.
When I went into that meeting on the Saturday morning, when they are asking us questions, one of the first things I thought about was the, you know, those articles that have been in the news over several years about the clone town, Cambridge clone town, and the, you know, and it's true.
Reclaim the high street, etc., by having more independence.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we've seen places like, especially Mill Road, that used to be a lovely bohemian street, didn't it, with independents all up and down it. Now it's pickpocketed with lots of Sainsbury's, Tesco, Co-op, Lundis, etc. You know, they're all up and down there, and it's changing the nature, I suppose.
True, true.
And you could similarly say the same thing with the centre of town, with the market, because, OK, we have all these lovely independent stalls. They are kind of surrounded by chains, you know, like Popeyes that went up recently, Franco Manca's Pizza, Yo Sushi, Starbucks, Nero, Costa, McDonald's. You know, they're all in competition with the individual stores that are...
Exactly. And yeah. But to give a place, the centre of a town, vibrancy and colour and so on. And I love the coloured awnings of the market stalls as well. It, you know, it makes you want to go there. But you've got to retain a proper identity in a market square, because otherwise, what is a market square for if it's not for a market?
Yeah. I guess it could become like a public square, perhaps, but that's off the paper, that's off the table already, because the council have already committed to this is going to stay a 7-day market.
Good. Yeah. I'm delighted to hear that. But
just in what way, what shape and form?
I know, and I think therefore it's really important. I must have a look at this survey because I want to express my feelings, certainly.
Yeah, and you've got options. You know, there's plenty of like tick box options, what you think it should contain, and then there's free writing bits. Excellent. Where you say, this is what I think of the market now and what I want of it.
Let's do it. Now details of free food available in and around Cambridge. The information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, which exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Laurel on Arbury Road has a large rosemary bush in her garden. She's happy to cut fresh sprigs for anyone who's interested, which is great because freshly cut rosemary, the scent of that's 10 times stronger than any supermarket equivalent, isn't it?
That's perfect.
And Laurel also has a large rhubarb plant that she's willing to harvest stems from. Again, just let her know when you can pick it up and she'll cut it just in time for you. Meanwhile, Smentek has, well, that's a name that's appeared on my Olio search quite regularly over the last few months. So they must be really getting into the spirit of the Olio app. And Smentek has taken up almost half of everything that's on offer today. He lives near King's Hedges and this time has available pak choi, bagels, shredded beetroots, edamame beans, did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Phew. and gourmet slaw, as well as tiger batons and baguettes, tiger rolls, 20 packs of crispy potato slices, 3 packs of half dozen hot dog rolls, tubs of cheese sauce and cheese bloomers, all available today for collection. And not to be outdone on the bread front is Tom, who lives quite close to Smentek, I think, in King's Hedges, and has multiple loaves of Warburton's bread, bagels, baps, burger buns and tiger cobble rolls available. And last but not least is Alison in Great Shelford, who has lots of loose bakery items such as croissants, Danish pastries, cheese twists, pain au chocolat, lots of different styles of Warburton's loaves and batons too. So, plenty of food available today, but keep an eye out for expiry dates, because I saw this. There is still an ad from a guy called Tim from 2 weeks ago who was giving away clotted cream that was best before the 28th of June.
quite. Need to be careful.
Yeah. Anyway, that concludes our brief look at free food from the Olio app today.
And there's another free app, of course, which is called Too Good To Go. And this has unsold food from restaurants and shops, and these are often at less than half price. And then, rather than specifying each leftover item, surplus food is simply packaged as a magic bag, ready for you to take home, instead of it being binned at the end of the day's trading.
OK, let's move on to our first news briefing of the day now, beginning with summer food news. Alpino Garden Farm Shop at Catworth near Kimbolton, slightly out of our area, but it's worth knowing about because it is currently selling ripe nectarines from its own 40-year-old trees, which grow under cover. There's plenty of other seasonal fruits and vegetables grown there too. Opening times can be found on its Facebook page, and there are occasional postings on Instagram.
And Heath Fruit Farm at Bluntisham is selling its fruit from the kiosk outside the farm from Monday to Friday, with the farm shop usually open from 9 till 1 on Saturdays, and they're also normally at Ely Market.
Bushelbox Farm at Willingham has the first plums of the season grown at the farm. They are Hermans, a variety that originated in Sweden, and Sanctus Hubertus. There's a massive 33 more varieties on the way.
And then Coe Farm off Barnwell Road in Cambridge has a number of volunteering days and evenings coming up. And there are vacancies this coming week on Sunday the 14th of July at 10 a.m. and 1:30 p.m, Tuesday at 5 p.m, Thursday 18th at 10 and at 1:30, and Friday the 19th at 10 o'clock again. Each of these sessions will be 3 hours long, and you can book a place via the Coe Farm website.
Sweet Pea Market Garden in Caxton welcomes volunteers too. Details are on its Instagram account, and Frank's Farm Shop in Eltersley has a weekend of food and fun coming up at the August bank holiday with guest chefs and a whole variety of foods. That begins on the 24th of August. And Alan has just texted us this. Meadows in Eltersley Avenue is closed today. And we're not sure why, but at least you know.
And then a quick leap from summer into winter. The Mill Road Winter Fair is taking bookings for stalls now via its website. So if you want a stall in December, the closing date is August the 1st.
There's an evening of authentic Syrian food at Farage's Kitchen Supper Club on the 19th of July. It will be at St Paul's Church in Hills Road, and you can book at Eventbrite. The cost for that is £39.71.
Pear and Olive Restaurant in Hildesheim has a collaboration with Thorn Wines on the 26th of July at 7:30. It's a six-course tasting menu with matching wines, and the cost is £100. You may need to be quick, however, as there are only 16 places available. Well, that's all the news for now, but there's more later.
Ben's Yard, the retail village between Ely and Soham, opened in June last year. Its restaurant and cafe has come under new management recently, courtesy of Alex Creppy and his team at Amelie. Now, Amelie began its life in Cambridge in the Grafton Centre, and it's still there, as is Amelie's food at their pop-up in the Cambridge Bistro off Hills Road next to the Sixth Form College. But if you've been to Ben's Yard in the past, perhaps now is the time to give the cafe and restaurant another try, because Amelie, they've won several awards for their food, being most well known for their flomkouche flatbread skinny pizzas. Earlier this week, I caught up with Alex Creppy of Amelie to talk about his new venture.
Yeah, so it's a really cool place to go visit. It's just full of independence. I mean, you've got all sorts. You've got a hairdresser, you've got a wellness suite where they've got yoga and Pilates. They've just finished their studio now. You've got a massive play area for the kids. You've got a 3 mile walk along the lake as well. You can really spend the whole day there, and it's a place where you can have a coffee in the morning in our cafe, get your hair done, or you go to a Pilates class, come for lunch afterwards, bring your kids, there's the play area. It's a really awesome place to go to. Yeah. We love it. We love it, yeah. So what was happening was we were ready to branch out. We contacted Ben's Yard last year or the year before with regards to a unit because we wanted to launch a new concept there. We're known for our flamkouche flatbreads, skinny pizzas. So we do have that at Ben's Yard. It's coming in early next week. We were waiting for the oven. In terms of new dishes, we've got the aubergine, as I mentioned before. The owners that ran it before, they had the burger, Big Ben burger, and the Caesar salad, like a really good Caesar salad. Amazing burger, smash burger.
Yeah.
We've kept them on the menu. So the menu is, we've got the Hispy cabbage. So something you wouldn't often get. I've rarely seen it around. So it's a grilled Hispy cabbage, char grilled. And then after that, we serve it with a tomkatsu sauce and a zesty mayonnaise. I'm just describing it really badly. You can see it on the pictures on Instagram, but you taste it. I mean, they're flavors that you can get every day in the house, or you can find in the supermarket, or even at the co-op. Put them together and it will make, you'd never go out of your way to cook a cabbage differently to what you'd normally do. And then this way you just eat it and it's amazing. It's sick. Yeah, I love it.
Here's a bit of backstory on Alex, his family, and their most famous menu item, the Amelie Flomkouche flatbread.
Well, I was born in the kitchen. I was born with a ladle in my mouth, sitting on the kitchen countertops, just watching my father cook, and my mother was always front of the house, but I was obsessed with it.
This is Alex. He and his father are professional cooks. The family hail from France. The father, Reggie, worked in the Michelin restaurants on the continent before moving to the UK 30 years ago to learn English and to run a business here, the Great House in Lebanon, which is featured in the top 50 longest-lasting establishments in the Good Food Guide, and it's won Michelin forks and AA rosettes.
The great thing of working with him is really the fact that he's got experience. He's had 3, 4, 5 successful restaurants in the past. He knows how tough the market is. It's not a family business where you've got the mother working in the back making the pastry and the sister in the front making the front of the house as well. Although it would be great doing that, it's just it's not our goal. And our goal is to bring forward Amelie.
Amelie, that's the name of this business.
So it's Amelie Flemkus Restaurants, with an S at the end because we're ambitious. Often we'll say Amelie Restaurants because it's Amelie. A lot of people do just say Amelie Restaurants because Flemkus is still a word that's not known to them. Or Amelie Flemkus, as we call it in the family. Amelie being named after my sister.
There's that word again, Flemkus. What is Flemkus? So here I am behind the counter with Alex, and you're just about to make some.
So I'm going to make a Flemkus. I'll make the authentic, which is the most traditional one that we have. We start off with the base, which is flour, water, a little bit of rapeseed oil, and nothing else. There's no yeast or anything, unlike quite often people will see a pizza. And visually it does look a lot like pizza, but it's going to be a lot lighter and a lot thinner, and you get a lot more flavours from the top.
So like a pizza, but not actually a pizza. This is made with dough rolled very, very thin, and it cooks rapidly. They therefore translate Flemkus as French fire bread.
After that, I've put on creme fraiche. So it's creme fraiche using a bit of salt and pepper, and it's a low-fat creme fraiche as well. Low-fat's always better, cooks better, and is a lot lighter on your body. Next, we have some very thin smoked bacon. We spread that all on top. So traditionally, in Alsace, in the 14th century, what bakers used to do to test their ovens out, they would roll a very, very thin piece of bread dough. And the bread dough would be so thin that the second it would cook, the bakers would know that their ovens were ready to start cooking their bread. Realizing after a while that they were wasting a piece of bread, they were like, okay, well, let's use this to eat. Let's do something with it. But it's so, we need to cover it with something so that it's nice to eat. And being in Alsace, where there's nothing but pigs, cows, grass, and flour. So they got some cream from the cows and some pork from the pigs. And that was it. That was when the Flemkus originated from. So unlike pizza, which was very much on a tomato base in the Mediterranean, these completely different flavours. This is a very rustic dish from Alsace and kind of went dead for a while and is now starting to be rejuvenated, especially in France, Germany, Austria. It's very, very popular over there. And then finally, we cover it with a bit of Gruyère cheese. Gruyère being a bit sweeter than your traditional cheddar, a bit more flavour than mozzarella. And that's it. That is literally the authentic.
Okay.
Goes in the oven, cooks for 90 seconds, and it's with you. From ordering it to it being in front of you, we're looking at not more than 3 minutes.
And in that time, the oven has to be super hot, doesn't it?
Yeah. So the oven is at about 330 degrees normally. These are pizza ovens, stone-baked pizza ovens. It does cook, but they're very delicate. Hence, we called it after my sister, because she's very delicate as a girl.
And here is the finished product.
You just slice it up.
And for anyone who doesn't know, as well as finding them at the Grafton Centre and now at Ben's Yard, you can also find Amelie in the Cambridge Bistro off Hills Road.
Yeah, the cookery school, yeah. So we have an Amelie Cafe pop-up at the cookery school next to Hills Road. It's a real gem of a place. It's off the beaten track. It's got a beautiful little park opposite, and it's got a large terrace so you can soak up the sun when it decides to be sunny. It's a counter with homemade food that's made every day. We've got some salads, we've got quiche. It's a true brunch spot. We love it there. It really kept us going. I mean, over the past year, it was a pleasure to go there. We've got Celine, our manager there, who's a ray of sunshine as well. So it's...
Is your dad always there?
He's not always there at the moment, no. We've been spending a lot of time at Ben's Yard.
Yeah.
He does a lot of the cooking for it still, so he drops it off daily or every other day. We now feel like we have created something within the region together and introduced this product, which is the Flemkus. It was a project, it was an idea, it was a dinner in Alsace one day. Yeah. We should do it, it was a dream. You rarely look back and think, oh, that was actually just, it was just a dinner. And I tasted something when I was immature, not even finished university. I thought the world was easy.
Yeah.
And then now we've actually, after several hurdles, we've come to where we are and we're still enjoying it. Still talking.
So, do check out the new Amelie Restaurants and Cafe at Ben's Yard Retail Village.
And it's just situated between Ely and Soham. So if you're looking for a day out with yourself or with the family, go there. You can spend several hours. You've got a large walking route around the area. You've got a large play area that's based on the Cathedral of Ely. It's in beautiful surroundings off Stuntley Estate. So you're within the estate and it's so easy access. free parking. It's a really beautiful place.
Well, we're heading off for a quick break now, but please stay with us as we'll be talking to Ben Aveling of Radmore Farm. And there'll be lots more news, jobs and the latest in the Cambridge food scene via social media. See you in two.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Monday evenings on Cambridge 105 Radio. Strummers and Dreamers with Les Ray.
As there are so many different kinds of folk songs out there, traditional ballads, shanties, work songs, songs by singer-songwriters of all kinds, my particular thing. You'll get live sessions and interviews by local performers and those from further afield, the big names on the scene and newly emerging independent artists. Lots of new music, some classics and something special just for you.
Strummers and Dreamers, online whenever you want it and Monday at 7 on Cambridge 105 Radio.
For a great range of electrical goods, visit urboturbo25.com. We're a top-rated online retailer based in St. Neots that's trusted by thousands of UK customers for the past 10 years. We stock a wide selection of kitchen appliances, vacuum cleaners, power tools, personal care items, phone accessories, and much, much more. We offer free shipping, and most of our items are available for next-day delivery. Check out our 100% feedback rating on Amazon and eBay. Visit us today at urboturbo25.com. That's urboturbo25.com.
We're live and local
all day long.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Well, welcome back to Flavour. And time for a bit more news now. And Molino Handmade Pasta has a pizza making workshop on the 18th of August from 3 till 5:30pm at the Linton Kitchen Bakery at Flourish in Hildesheim. The tickets for this are £40, and as well as making a pizza, there will be a sit-down meal and a dessert from the Linton Kitchen. But you may need to book soon, as places are very limited.
Meanwhile, The Yard in Ely has an end-of-summer coffee festival. That's on September the 7th and the 8th. You can try new coffees, roast your own beans, do some cupping, and have a go at latte art.
Steak and Honour has a new food for you to try called frickles. And what they are is crinkle-cut gherkins coated in breadcrumbs, presumably deep-fried, and then served with a spicy sriracha mayo. And they're available from their Wheeler Street shop now.
I think I was sold on that until you got to the spicy sriracha mayo. That's not quite my thing, but gherkins?
I like pickles. I like gherkins.
Love gherkins now.
I suppose gherkin chips, really.
I'll give them the try. I'll take the bullet.
Like it, like it.
It's the Caxton's Farmers Market on the 14th of July, which is tomorrow, if you're listening to us live, of course. It runs from 9:30 till 12 noon.
And then the next Grandston Farmers Market is on the 28th of July from 9 to 1, with almost 40 traders, and many of these are selling food and drink.
On Cambridge's Daily Market, there is a new trader, Lydia, who specialises in homemade Caribbean foods and sauces.
Nice. And then at the North Stow Tap and Social on the 20th of July, there's a tap takeover by the Avex Brewing Company. And this is a craft brewer from Liverpool. There'll be 10 different beers available and the bar is open from noon till 11pm. There's an American craft beer tasting evening happening on the 24th of July, and that's at the Maypole Pub in Park Street. And it runs from 6 till 9pm, and the entry is free.
And Cambridge Sustainable Food has free lunches available during the summer holidays. That's for children and their families in Cambridge. The lunches will be available on the following dates: the 22nd of July at Brownfields Community Centre, the 24th and 31st of July at the Church of the Good Shepherd, and the 25th of July at Stories Field Centre. Full details can be found on the Cambridge Sustainable Food website. And that is all of our news for now. More later.
Well, let's move on to our final feature. And this is about Ben Aveling and his wife Vicky, who have been delivering fresh meat and produce from their farm in Towcester to Cambridge since the mid-2000s. However, last May they closed the doors on their Radmore Farm shop, sadly, for the final time, because this business had become a victim of COVID.
Yeah, even when the restrictions were lifted and people could go back to the shops again, the footfall never reached pre-pandemic levels.
And this was a real shame to hear, because the Padmore Farm Shop produced very high-quality meats, and the business had built up a very strong following.
Mm, I think Ben's as well-known for his personality as much as his produce, because he really engages with his customers through all the social media channels. They ask him questions, he answers then and there if he can. You know, he really provides that personal touch, not simply dealing with their orders.
Well, this week, Ben got back in touch with us to talk about his new website and how things have been progressing over the last 14 months.
Yeah, it's been very strange not having the shop. I mean, that's been my entire adult life, really. I've had a shop, and I mean, I'm not going to say unexpected, because it was getting quieter, and we were turning, we were trying to change it, we were trying to keep things going. But every single thing we did seemed to just not, in the old days, quote, when you tried something new, it usually worked. Post-COVID, it doesn't seem to. I don't know if it's because the world's just slightly more disjointed, or I know for sure the world's more online, which is part of the reason I did this, because from May 22, you could almost look at a graph and see the drop. From that restrictions release day, you can almost see the drop in our takings. Yeah. Off a cliff. That's no one's fault. It's just the way things went. But I remember thinking to myself, you know, these things happen. And they have happened over the many years we've traded. We've had good times and bad times. And I just thought, oh, here we go, another bad time. And then a year later, we were closed. Yeah. And I was like, this isn't working. And with all the will and positivity in the world, I was like, well, actually, we can't keep doing it. We've gone home, thought about it, kept everything afloat. The farm's still going, the glamping's still going, the meat's still going, the deliveries are still going. And actually, we've got this whole project that we'd started through lockdown, which is the livestock project, if you like, which takes years to bear fruit. And round now is the time it's all coming through. And we knew this would be the case. So we thought months back, right, we're going to have to build something, not a physical shop. But the key is, like I said, someone anywhere in the country has to be able to order it. Because people in Cambridge might not want our delivery day. They might want a Wednesday next week. And the website means that you can do that. If you wanted to message us and say, I need it on this day, then we could probably do that. So you don't have to commit to days, and you do Saturday mornings. And whoever wants to use us, the option's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the other week, I got asked to do a demonstration, and it was very fun. And I went to WI and did like a sausage demo. And so I took meats there and all this stuff. It's very strange walking into somewhere you've never been before, and there's about 40 of them there, expecting a show, and they ended up being massively engaged in it. And I was just telling them about generally the meats, the stories around it, why we do things, and then I sort of started waffling about sustainability and why we need to eat this kind of food and why we can't do that. You know what I'm like, I just went off on one. We ended up talking for ages, and everyone in the crowd was asking questions. Women were coming up and making sausages. Yeah. And at the end, we sold sausages I brought, sausages we made and everything. It all sold. In fact, I'm booked up by a different WI because they told them to do the same sort of thing. And so my point is, the hardest thing that I struggle with is, if you get me in front of people, they will then understand what I'm trying to tell them. And usually our stuff sells really well. People go, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I can articulate it face to face. It's so hard online. It's so hard to be able to say to people, look, there's no gimmicks, there's no lies, it's transparent, it's just really good, and it's a really good price, it's fair, it's right, you should buy it. And that's the hardest hurdle. The closest we can get to it is a YouTube video or a radio interview, or that's as close as I can get to it, and that's why I try and do as much of it as I can, just so people can look into your eyes and know it's not a lie. Yeah. You know, every social media is selling a story, and every business is trying to survive. To quote Oasis, you only see what people want you to see. And that's a lot of the problem with social media. I'm actually scruffy as hell. My hair's never done. I'm always dirty. I say exactly what I think. And I'm trying to make people think, if they do randomly come across and meet me, they will see, oh, that is exactly what he's like. And that's very important to me, that I'm not dressed up or tidy or anything like that. I'm exactly the same all the time. And for me, it's about, you know, the whole persona of it. It's the fact that it's not a persona. But it's a really hard sell, because there's so much around that gets uncovered to not be true, you do unfortunately fall into that bracket. You're sort of a fraud until proven otherwise, you know, in these days. And a lot of people are very suspicious and also misled. And, you know, I don't like the word education, that's not what I really mean, but we're missold information, so people just don't know what they're talking about. Mm. The other night someone was talking about, you know, I'm a bit funny about meats because of all the hormones in it. Well, that's just nonsense. There's no hormone. It's illegal to put hormones in our meats in this country. Mm. It's not illegal to import them. It's illegal for us to do that. And people are like, oh, really? But it's plastered everywhere, so no one knows what's right. No one knows what's true. There's always also the chlorine chicken. We don't do that here, but sure, let's import it. Yeah. But then you just think to yourself, I mean, this is what I was talking about in my podcast today. It's just a bit like, oh, my God, you put your head in your hands when you think about what's going on. The sausage demonstration that I did, I was telling them there that a really good example of this was it's not actually meat, it was eggs. In this country, we always adhere to, EU, when we're in the EU especially, certain rules and welfare standards. And what happened was there's an egg producer, I think he produced something like 10 million eggs a week. It was a big, big egg farm, and they were all battery hens. Mm-hmm. And the rules overnight changed to 3 birds minimum in a cage and some space regulations. So they couldn't produce as many eggs, basically.
Yeah.
Overnight, it meant he didn't produce as many eggs, but for basically the same amount of money he was getting. Mm-hmm. So what happened was he could produce less eggs for the same price. Supermarkets were like, well, why have you put your egg prices up? And, oh, bloody blah, the regulations have changed. And the supermarkets go, OK, not really. We don't really want to pay that. What we'll do is in that other country, Italy or whatever, they've been told to do this with the rules, but they just haven't listened and can't be bothered to do it. So we'll just buy them from them. And that applies to most things. Mm. So, like, if someone sells good quality English pork that they've reared themselves, like us on the farm, and worked really hard for, but then supermarket goes, oh, well, I don't want to pay £5 a kilo. I want to pay four. I'll just get it from Denmark, where Denmark they're kept in, like, compared to this country, in absolute squalor. Mm. Because our standards in this country are so good. If you're not even thinking about you buying meat from me, just buying British meat.
Yeah.
Is a completely different level because our lowest standards, the bog standard in this country, is probably still way higher than some of the standards of the abroad reared meat because they just don't really care about it as much because it's not as big a deal. I mean, abroad, a lot of them are very happy to just eat meat and not the provenance and the quality is key to them, but I don't think they really care about the treatment and the welfare. That's not really a problem for some countries. So, yeah. So those countries are the cheapest to buy from because they just pack them in as quick as they can. And so that's what the example I gave in that talk. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that people don't know. They just don't know that. And, you know, so much food that's been alive, hidden in what we eat, we don't even realise we're buying it.
Yeah.
A wrap from the supermarket that you eat just for your lunch one day, and you might say, I never really eat much chicken, but you probably eat chicken every day in a sandwich. Mm. Where's that come from? So eating quality meat less often is much easier to do than it is to give up those things because you don't realise you're eating meat, but that fundamentally it's the hidden meat that's the problem. You know? It's a tough one, isn't it? It's a real tough one because I also appreciate there's people out there who need to buy the cheapest substandard. More, I say substandard sounds bad, you know what I mean? And they'll go and they'll pick on price. And ours is going to be comparable sometimes and sometimes not. And if it's price you're after, then that's not necessarily the point of what we're doing.
Exactly.
And that's so it's a tough one. You can't say, oh, I can't afford to buy my family a pack of mince this week. For now, we've got people who are willing to, well, they want to buy the quality and they want to understand what it's about. And that's what we're here for. And actually, a lot of the time, we can offer special offers on some things too. So it's sort of, we're trying to put it out there. The fact that we can sell more of our meats direct to people means actually the price will be better overall because we're using everything up. And if I sell my pigs to the butcher, I get a lot less than I do if I sell them to you guys as a pork chop or a piece of bacon or a goat leg or whatever. Even then, you can offer better prices and points like that. So, it's really interesting. It's a lot to unpack. I mean, in fact, what's fun is when we have people come and stay on the farm, they often have a farm tour as well.
Oh,
so we show them around and, you know, there's no weird hidden barns over there or anything like that, you know. You know, we've had 3 people go missing in the last 2 weeks or nothing, you know. So our sows, which are like the pig mums, they're in little barns, sort of half outdoors, if you like. They've got like a little insulated area and it's full of straw. Mm. So they have all the piglets in the straw,
yeah.
But then we can get in and clean it out. And when it's weaning time, we can just take the mum out for a rest and pop her back into, she's got a thumping great straw yard that she shares. And then when it's time you get them, then they can, we have like little pieces of paddock prepared, or we sometimes have some barns for like, if the, we do some like butcher pigs. So the place that does the slaughtering, they will also buy some pigs from us. So if we've got more pigs than we need, we'll put some pigs into a barn for them, and they'll say, okay, in 10 weeks we'll buy those ones. And in the meantime, we'll do the ones that are the outside ones. So because it's small, we sort of go, well, that few will go there, that few will go there. You know, it's not like a, it's not a machine, you know? And then we still muck all the little things out by hand. And people quite like the fact they can come and see a mum with her piglets in straw and muck and all the pig, sort of the whole thing that they expect from a pig, they get to see it all. Got a lovely sort of like clean area and mucky area, which pigs love to have both, because you know, that's what pigs love.
Pigs and are very clean animals.
They're very clean, so they love having a lovely dirty area, so they just go over there and do the toilet and go back to the clean. I mean, people come to stay, they absolutely love that. I mean, we've had lambing time and kidding time, so we have guests come to stay at the farm and they come and like hug a lamb or hug a goat. We're very transparent about it because everything is free range and everything like this, but there's a lot of an animal's life, whether it's free range or not, will be spent indoors. And I think you've got to be happy to show people inside. You know, if they come to the farm, you don't want to shy away from all the processes. There's, when a kid's born, you're not, it's not going to be born outside. So let's show the customer who's coming to stay that, that they live in these little pens whilst they're learning and whilst they're growing, and then they go outside and all these things. And I think all of the stuff that people are afraid to show gets hidden, so everybody doesn't really realise what happens at each stage. Like grass-fed beef is a real one, because 3, 4, 5 months maybe even, depending on the weather, a beef will be indoors, even if it's completely free-range and grass-fed, because it's winter. And a lot of people sort of go, oh, there's a, they could be looking at the most prime organic grass-fed beef in a barn and, you know, having a fit about it. But you know that's actually just part of the year. So everything I'm doing is just trying to sort of not tell, but show. You know, I don't like telling people because, you know, I'm not an expert on anything. I know a little bit about a little bit. I think Clarkson's Farm's done a lot. That's the thing we've noticed the most. Everyone's going, oh, just like Clarkson's Farm. And that's what we hear all the time when people come to the farm, because it's just real and normal. But I haven't quite got the Twitter following that Clarkson's got.
Well, should we let the listener know about your various social media addresses?
Yes, please. Now you're talking. My podcast is at Cracking Yolks, because I wanted to make something slightly different. Obviously, it's a pun on cracking jokes, but and farmy with eggs. And then we've got at Radmore Farm Shop, I think, is the one for Facebook and Instagram. We've also got at Radmore Farm on TikTok. I've got at Cracking Yolks on YouTube. I've also got, what's the other one, LinkedIn. That's me, Ben Avening, on LinkedIn, but I share a lot of content on there. Twitter, at Radmore Farm, I use. Oh, sorry, X. I don't think I'm ever going to call it X. So, yeah, we do lots of stuff when you think about it. It's tons.
Well, thanks so much for coming in.
No, it's been nice to see you again.
Yeah, great to chat and to catch up and just to find out what's been going on in the intervening year.
A lot.
Yes, so much. All right, thanks a lot, Ben.
Thank you, mate. Thank you very much.
Great to see Ben Aveling again.
Drink that wine. Well, we're on to wine news now. Gutter and Stars has a summer session on the 20th of July from noon till 6pm. The door to the winery will be open and you can take children, pets and picnics. Steak and Honour will be there serving burgers until 2pm. And that's in French's Road off Victoria Road.
And Gutter and Stars has a wine club that you can join. Here is vintner Chris Wilson with the details.
So you join and you receive 9 bottles of wine across the year, 3 in April, 3 in July and 3 in November. And you also can come and have a tasting here at the winery as part of the club. You'll receive some other bits and pieces, some merchandise, and also towards the end of the year with the November wines, a limited edition print piece of artwork that my designer has put together, or will put together for this year as well. So it's a nice sort of way of getting involved and receiving wine through your door, perhaps when you've forgotten that you're a member of the club. And within those 9 bottles each year, there'll be 1 or 2 exclusive wines made just for club members that won't be available elsewhere.
Mm. Well, Noel Young Wines has a tasting at the Three Horseshoes in Stapleford on the 17th of July at 7pm. And it's £30 per person with sparkling wine on arrival and a flight of wines, including a dessert wine and a selection of foods throughout the evening.
The next tasting at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road will be South African wines on the 18th of July. There'll be an Algarve wine evening on the 29th of July from 7 till 9 p.m. for £30, and that'll be featuring wine specialist Steve Hovington.
The Cambridge Wine School has, on the 20th of July at Maddingley Hall, an introduction to wine beginning at 11 a.m. And it's an informal wine tasting day that includes a two-course lunch. And the cost for this is £120.
On the 7th of August, there is an Old World and New World wine night. That's at Finboy's in Mill Road, with paired fish dishes like Portland crab tostada with broad bean mole verde asparagus, coriander mint and fennel pollen. The cost for that night is £75.
And Cambridge Wine Merchants has an evening of wine and cheese in its Bridge Street branch on the 20th of August. Camilla from the Cambridge Cheese Company will be there with six cheeses, and each will be paired with a glass of wine. It starts at 6:30 and it's £45. There are limited spaces and you can book via the Cambridge Wine Instagram bio or at the Cambridge Cheese Company shop in All Saints Passage.
And this just in from our colleague Alan Alder. Both branches of Meadows have had to close for now. They're selling off their cheeses at reduced prices. So contact them for information about ordering and delivery. And that is all of our food and drink news for today. And that music signals time for news from social media. First thing I saw was a post from Amelie Cafe and Bake Shop on Instagram talking about their new breakfast menu, which is, of course, looking pretty special, and we talked about that earlier. Also, we mentioned them in the news. CoFarm have been posting about their broad bean harvest with three volunteer business groups. It's a lovely day out in the fields. Do give it a try if you can, because plenty of the food harvested gets donated to local food groups.
And there's a tweet from Cambridge Sustainable Food. The Aikman Community Centre Growing Space is seeking volunteer gardeners to help with the shared growing space for fruits and veg. And it's this Wednesday, the 17th July, 12 till 2. Call in for a chat or email the starbook at outlook.com.
Culinaris have been posting about their weekend treats. Freshly sliced meats, beautiful fresh figs, wheels of cheese, exotic chocolates, courgette flower boxes and tomatoes of every shape and colour.
And the Plough in Shepworth are hosting a folk music festival this weekend with a range of food providers there. To gaiters, the Taqueria Gringa, with music from 12 till 11 p.m. and Sunday with music from 11:30 until past 5 p.m. And the food providers are Smulva Spudders.
And that's all our social media news for today. There's Green Onion signalling the start of our job section, and Fancits is looking for full-time chefs in various positions with seven shifts a week from Tuesdays to Saturdays. Applications are invited from chefs at all levels of experience. Also, a member of the front-of-house team is needed, for which no experience is required. For more information or to apply, email office at fancits.com. That's spelt F-A-N-C-E-T-T-S.com. You'll need to attach your CV for that application.
The Gog Farm Shop needs a senior sous chef who can work with a wood-fired asado grill, pizza ovens, big green eggs, and also be involved with the cafe and street food, cookery classes and feasting events. And to apply, send your CV to hello@thegog.com or contact them for more details.
Here's some jobs in brief now. Contact the company concerned for more information or just pop in a quiet time for a chat. There's a vacancy for a head chef at Prana in Mill Road.
Chefs are needed at the Town and Gown, Pimp My Fish and at Flatiron. And a pastry chef is required at the Quine Mill Hotel. They're looking for a senior pasta chef at Aromi, and Pizza Pilgrims needs a pizza chef.
Vacancies for sous chefs exist at Pint Shop and Butch Annie's, and a senior sous chef vacancy exists at the Cambridge Dining Company.
Chefs de partie are needed at the Quine Mill Hotel, the Varsity Hotel, the Merler Institute and at Pembroke College. Midsummer House needs a chef de partie or junior sous chef, and King's College is looking for a demi chef de partie.
And finally, King's College is desperately seeking a commis chef. All of which brings us to the end of today's programme. Now, don't forget, you can catch Flavour on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon. Then we are repeated on Mondays at 6 p.m. and Thursdays at 2 p.m. And don't forget that Flavour will also be available as a podcast early next week, if not sooner. Coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio this afternoon is the Cambridge Music Mix, followed by Home with Steffi Callister at 4 p.m.
But that's all from us. We'll be back on the 27th of July with lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. So, until then...
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Just the shit.